This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Country and the Folk Strip. The event takes place Saturday, February 23rd from 7 to 10 p.m. at St. David of Wales Episcopal Church, 2800 Southeast Harrison in Portland, Oregon. The event includes dessert and coffee, a silent auction, a raffle, and more. Once in a Boo Moon, Saturday, February 23rd, 7 p.m. at St. David of Wales Episcopal Church. More information can be found at kboo.fm/BooMoon2013.
KBOO Radio is proud to help Zippity News and a clothes drive to help clothe the homeless. We will be collecting gloves, hats, and scarves until February 15th, when the clothes will be distributed throughout the homeless community. KBOO is located on 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, just off Burnside. Thank you, and we hope to see you donating clothes to help keep the homeless warm this winter.
It is 8:04, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, how many schools will be closed in Portland this year? We'll be talking about proposed closure of Woodlawn and or Vernon Elementary School. I mean, I could get into a little bit more about that, but let me say, has your school ever been closed? Is your school on the chopping block? Call us and tell us what it was like and what you're thinking. 503-231-8182. 8182? Do I have the number right, Magical Engineering Pixie? I'm having a day. Now, listen, 8187. Okay, listeners, I had several guests confirmed to come on the air today, and each one a parent of an elementary schooler, and now each one is canceled out because they have a cold or the flu. So, listeners, are you a student at home right now because you're sick? I'd really love to hear from you. We don't hear from students often enough. Anyway, school closures and the number to call, 503-231-8187. And, okay, listeners, so I don't know if you're hip with what's going on with Portland Public Schools right now. Last year, a couple schools were closed. Then this year, the school district basically, when we talk about school closures, we're only talking about the Jefferson High School cluster, by the way, as far as I can tell, which is in North and Northeast Portland. It's basically the school cluster that houses the traditional African-American neighborhood in the town. And now that community, the black community is scattered all over the place, many people relocated to East County. where it's a different school district, a different couple of school districts. Actually, I believe the Park Rose District is Centennial, a separate district. And those schools out there are pretty overcrowded. And so meanwhile, still in the inner city here in Portland, we have underutilized schools where white flight from some of these schools is still an issue. And I want to, read through a few articles here in the Oregonian about this. I think their coverage has been they've had some pretty good coverage. But again, listeners, no guests today. Everybody's at home with ill children. And we're talking about school closures, Portland Public Schools. We would love to hear from you. 503-231-8187. Have you had a school closed? Is your school on the chopping block? Did anybody out there go to Jefferson High School in the 70s? Would really love to hear from you. All right, 503-231-8187. People, pick up the phone. Don't wait till the end of the show. Anyway, so I'm going to just start going over some of the stuff that's happening with the Portland Public Schools right now. You know, they got handed like a $25 million shortfall, I think, by the state. Maybe some people would quibble with me about where the funding shortfalls come from. So because of what the state legislature did not budget for education, Portland schools, it looks like the only tool we ever give them is a machete, right? To balance the budget, same with the city of Portland. But anyway, Portland Public Schools administrators defended proposal to close schools within the Jefferson High School cluster, saying officials feel the move is necessary to improve educational programs for students. This is the January 23rd article in the Oregonian by Nicole Dunca. I think she does a pretty good job. We would not have engaged in a process that asks of a community if we did not feel terrible urgency to address the challenges that exist in this cluster right now, Chief Academic Officer Sue Ann Higgins said during a Tuesday night work session. This didn't pop out of nowhere. However, I'm here to tell you that a lot of the parents for specifically Vernon and Woodlawn feel that the proposal to shut their schools did come from nowhere, because the original proposal, population rebalancing proposal, something like that, it's been discussed for 3 or 4 months. And this thing about whether to cut these schools didn't pop up until just a couple of weeks ago. Back to the Oregonian story. Community opposition is heating up as a board vote on the changes looms. After months of collecting input and 6 initial scenarios released in November, district officials last week floated 2 proposals, both of which include shutting down schools. We're talking about school closures in Portland Public Schools. I'd love to hear from you people. Are you awake? Are you sick? Does everybody have the flu and a cold? Maybe this should be a show about epidemiology. Anyway, 503-231-8187. I'm not whining, but it feels very lonely here in this room with all of our guests who are ill and nobody calling in. Anyway, we usually do have a guest in the studio. This is one of those days. But shutting down schools, there's a lot more coming up about that. So this Friday, February 1st, Portland Public Schools Superintendent Carol Smith is expected to release her recommendation for what the district should do. And then the board itself votes on it. I believe their vote is scheduled for the second week of February. Someone could call and help us to that information. 503-231-8187. One of the things that really strikes me about the school closures is how many decades this has rolled out. Right. And it seems to me like, I mean, I would suggest to you that it's really the federal government, in my opinion, that set up this situation back when Ronald Reagan was president. I don't know if you guys remember this, but when Ronald Reagan was president, his administration published this report. It was called A Nation at Risk. And it was the first federal report, I'll say after the civil rights era, that demonized public education and basically started punishing it and started that back to basics movement in education, which was, I'm just putting this out to you, I think it was the beginning of the wide scale unraveling of our modern school system. Because of course, this is the United States of America and our public education system has never worked for everyone, right? it wasn't even that long ago where black students weren't even allowed to go to the same classrooms as white students. So, I mean, this is a long history of inequity. But now, it's the 21st century. We like to think that we are in a, an industrialized nation, and that somebody somewhere would actually make full funding for public education a priority. Anyway, looks like we got a full slate of callers. Thanks, you guys. We have Janet. Janet on the phone. Janet, is that you?
Yeah, Janet, this is the Janet that you interviewed for the scanner. It's Janet Strong, your original flaky guest.
No, it's not flake. It is. I mean it. Everybody's ill, and that's the other piece of this is epidemiology. But
yes.
What's going on? What school, Janet? Your kids are from Vernon?
Well, actually, my daughter is supposed to go to Vernon Kindergarten next year.
Okay.
I don't even have a school-age child yet. I'm just terrified that my child won't have a school to go to
right. Next
year. So that's why I got involved.
Tell us what you guys are doing at Vernon. What meetings have you had, and what are you doing now?
Well, the Portland Public School District has hosted community information meetings at most of the schools that would be affected by this enrollment balancing process. So I went to one meeting a couple of months ago when they first released their six scenarios. I went to the meeting on the 18th of January at Vernon after they released their final two scenarios on January 14th. That's when I really got outraged. When they presented all of a sudden these two scenarios that involved school closures when they hadn't brought up any possibilities of school closures before. So, and then I started going to rallies and board meetings and writing letters and emails and talking to media.
Yeah, and your kid's not even in school yet.
Yeah, well, you know, I am actually an educator myself. I'm a licensed high school teacher. I don't work in the high school right now. I work at PCC. I got laid off a couple of years ago, and then because of family scheduling, it works better to be a part-time college teacher right now. But my true love is, you know, K-12 public education, and I want to go back and work with high schoolers again. When my kids are a little older.
Okay, so Janet, this is what I really want to put out to you. What the heck are we doing with education? You, as an educator, someone inside that system, what do you think we should be doing?
Well, there's a problem that goes way deeper than the enrollment balancing process that we're doing in the Jefferson cluster right now. We're not adequately funding education anywhere in the U.S., and some states have it harder than others. I think Oregon is one of those states, started out with Measure 5 a long time ago. We don't have adequate funding. That's the first problem. I think, secondly, we're not really using the funding that we have very wisely.
What should we be doing with it that we're not, in your opinion?
In my opinion, standardized testing is not a really good measurement for student success, and it also is very, very costly. Hold on one second.
I hear a kid. I hear a kid. It's interesting what Janet said too about the enrollment balancing and the deeper problems, because in other part, you know what, in Washington State, the parents sue the schools and they get results. So like 10 years ago, Seattle parents sued their school district, and it ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court, I believe. Wasn't it the U.S. Supreme Court? It was about whether race can be used as a factor in enrollment balancing. I believe that's what they were really looking at, the exact same thing as here. And here, though, I don't see any parents getting lawyers. I don't see any groups getting an attorney. But anyway, Janet, so what do you think is the most important thing for our listeners, even people that do not have kids in the schools? What's the most important thing that you think that our listeners should know, and what should we be doing?
I think that people in the Portland community need to demand from Portland Public Schools and the school board that we develop a strategic long-term plan that's district-wide. What do we want all of our students in the Portland area to be able to do? Don't focus on the Jefferson cluster or some other cluster. Focus first on the long-term vision, and then go about making plans district-wide, changes district-wide to get you to that goal.
Awesome, Janet. Now, is there another meeting coming up that we can that people can go to if they want to support what you're doing?
There is a meeting. The PAT, the Portland Association of Teachers, is having a meeting on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. So you can go to the PATU website for that. There are board meetings coming up. The superintendent is supposed to release her, make her final recommendation to the board, I believe, on February 1st. And then we will have all of February before the board makes their final decision based on the superintendent's recommendation. So I'm sure that there will be board meetings and other community meetings coming up. I think everybody's right now holding their breath and waiting for the superintendent's final recommendation. So I don't know of any meetings scheduled right now. But mm-hmm. aside from meetings, you don't have to go to a meeting to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
Start sending emails. Start sending letters.
All
you
right.
You feel strongly about this. Get your voice out there.
All right. Thanks so much for calling in, Janet. Really appreciate your time. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're talking about school closures in Portland Public Schools. This year, 2013, right now, the Portland Public Schools is in the middle of what they're calling an enrollment balancing process in the Jefferson Cluster. Right? That's only the neighborhoods that are where the traditional Black community is. It's not about any of the other neighborhoods in the city. And this Friday, February 1st, Superintendent Carol Smith is slated to give her recommendation for whether these schools should be closed or not. Now, she does not... Actually, she doesn't get the final decision. I think that the school board itself votes on it. And so last year, the school board voted to close... Humboldt Elementary School, which was celebrating its 50th anniversary, and they also closed the Harriet Tubman Young Women's Leadership Academy, the only science, technology, engineering, math school for girls in the state of Oregon, and the only one that was really serving people of color. And I do want to shout out Martin Gonzalez. He's the chair of the school board. He was the person who voted against those closures. We should probably get him on this show. A lot of educators could never make it at this hour. Anyway, we have other callers. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Joanne. Joanne, what do you think?
You know, I read looked at quickly about a school czar. I wonder about him. And this is not your focus, Minocus, but here's what I want. Debt-free college education and job training. And yes, I'm awake, and I'm waiting to die, and that's my personal reality. Thank you.
All right, Joanne, thanks for calling. I feel like Joanne said focus monocus. I love that. Did she say that? That's an awesome phrase. And Joanne is actually so she brings it up. Joanne just said, "What about the school czar?" Yes. Oh, okay. The Magical Engineering Pixie was talking to me in my ear there, and I just got off track a little bit. Joanne brought up the school czar. That would be Rudy Crewe. He was hired by the governor last year. He's supposed to come in and help reform the entire school system, where the governor's vision is that we will figure out a different way of funding schools from pre-K all the way through college. So, and then Joanne brings up this issue about cost-free college education and job training, which, can I just come out and say, Joanne, why don't I hear public officials say that? Why don't I hear elected officials say that? I did hear Mayor Charlie Hale say something like that while he was running for office. And then one of the first things he does is cuts an education and jobs program for at-risk youth. So I'm just curious about that. Now, in the past few weeks, we've also talked about foreclosure. And our super cool pals that we had on the air last week, which was folks from Occupy Gresham, We Are Oregon, people that are active in trying to keep people in their homes, they are picketing. They've been really going after the Sheriff Dan Staton around why is he basically letting the sheriff's department be the bad guys and dragging people out of their homes because of Fannie Mae foreclosures on their homes. So our pals that were here last week, they went and did a sit-in in the sheriff's office, which was cool, and I got to visit part of that. And they came away from that with the mayor agreeing in principle. I'm sorry, the sheriff, the Multnomah County Sheriff, Dan Staton, agreeing in principle that it's not a good idea to have the sheriffs. The sheriffs shouldn't be the ones that are basically strong arm for Fannie Mae and the banks, which is interesting. So now I just want to put this out to people here. So there, in that case, we've got the sheriff basically in this situation where he's having to have his bureau, I don't know what's the word, do things that hurt people on the behalf of the corporate sector, right? And now here with the Portland Public Schools Board, I feel like too, when I look at the people that are on the school's board, I feel as though I'm looking at least some people that don't agree with what their choices are, including Mr. Martin Gonzalez, people that do not agree with what their choices are. And, you know, what is their intention? What is the school board's intention? What's the school superintendent's intention? I know these people want to make education work. I feel as though it's pretty clear that the entire education system does not work. And I really wish, personally, that I could see school boards, school superintendents, just like the sheriffs, standing up to the federal government and the state and protesting the wrong choices they're given. I just want to put that out. That's just me. We have a full slate of callers. Let's go back to the phone lines. Oh, we have Lisa Hatton on the phone. Lisa Hatton is one of our guests. She's going to be, Lisa, your kids are at Woodlawn?
No, at Vernon.
Vernon. Lisa, tell me, what have you guys been doing at Vernon? What have you seen there with the parents mobilizing to try to make sure the school does not get closed down?
Well, it's interesting. Like Janet had said, we had several meetings with the school district prior to the final two announcements, and we had very little indication that the school might close. And it really took, I think, the threat of the school closing to get the strongest voices out there. We had a big group of people who were meeting and who were trying to decipher the original six scenarios, but really to get people protesting and to be writing massive amounts of letters to the school board and Superintendent Smith, it really took the threat of the school being closed to start to really call out. So we have a very, very active Facebook page, and part there's also a North and Northeast cluster Facebook page, and so this whole process has also brought about a conversation, a very active dialogue between the schools, which has been really great, because what it's done is it's united people, and it's let us hear the voices of the other schools, what's important to them, what works, what doesn't work, what they think the solution should be. And at Vernon, we had a meeting prior to the last community meeting that the district held at our school to try to come to some consensus for our school. And there were four things that we decided to put forth that we also thought would work for the whole district, because what we really felt strongly about was we didn't want to be putting one school against another, which in some ways the process
does. It absolutely does.
Right. Even it, maybe that wasn't the intention. I am not a conspiracy theorist. I think that the district has the kids' best interests in their hearts. I think they're under a lot of different constraints. But at any rate, so the four points that we came up with was, one, to slow the whole process down, that we needed more time to be able to, now that we had two actual scenarios that we could think about, chew on, try to decide what we did like, what we didn't like, or to come up with a whole other plan, we need time to do that. So we're asking for them to slow the process down. And another thing was, like Janet said, to come up with a long-term strategic plan for the whole district. The other was to amend the transfer policy, which is one of the main things that we feel has contributed to so many families leaving the Jefferson cluster. There's some really great magnet and specialty schools out there, and it's, you can't blame a parent for saying, I want that, but the culture of PPS has become, gosh, what's best for my kid? The last choice seems to be, especially for white middle-class families, to look at their neighborhood school. What they think they have to do is think about, what's special about my kid? And which school is the best fit? And then I'm going to enter the lottery. or write a letter to MLC or whatever it takes to get into the different charter schools that are out there, and which I think is a lottery for most of them as well, mm-hmm. or go to a private school, you know. But it's basically people think they have to do whatever they can to find the best fit for their kid instead of even going into their own neighborhood school, regardless of its reputation, but going in, really looking at it, seeing what's offered, what are the teachers like, what programs do they offer. You know, I mean, I know a lot of people in my neighborhood who in the last 5 years either moved or chose some other school or used a different address to go to a different school. They never even went to the kindergarten roundup or an open house or a community event at Vernon. They never gave it a chance. And it's just really unfortunate because once I stepped in the door and looked at what was going on and decided to give it a chance, we started in pre-K there 3 years ago, and it was just... It was amazing. The community is fantastic, and the teachers are great, et cetera, et cetera. I'm getting totally off point. So
no, but you were the four things that we've got slow the process down. We've got create a district-wide strategic plan instead of just strategic planning the Jefferson cluster. Change the transfer policy, and what's the last thing?
And of course, I'm going to draw a blank.
That's okay.
Another caller. Well, you know what? I have it on a poster here in my office. So I'll walk in there and look at it, but. So anyway, in terms of the neighborhood schools, I think, that was it. Don't close the neighborhood schools. We really feel like the district needs to commit to every neighborhood having a neighborhood school. And they've already closed around the city, but especially in the Jefferson Cluster, lots of the neighborhood schools. The Jefferson Cluster has had more schools close in the last, I don't know exactly the dates, but I'm going to say the last, five years
I was gonna
than
say.
The rest of the district combined.
Yeah.
And that is just not fair. And at the same time, I understand we have some low-performing schools that are also under-enrolled.
Lisa, so you know one of the things that surprises me about that, too? So there's this awesome, and I'm just going to say awesome, group of bloggers. They're almost sort of anonymous in a way, at this website called the Chief Joseph Bucket Brigade. People,
yeah.
CJBucketBrigade.com. Wow, they took us over there. Chief Joseph was on the chopping block, remember, a few years ago. So on this blog, independent people have been taking Portland Public Schools' numbers, raw data, and crunching it into different analysis. And they've rolled out a different infographic every single day, I think, for the past week or week and a half. It's so juicy.
Yeah, and it's amazing. It really is. And they were able to present that to the school board on Monday night. They weren't able to go into as much detail as I wish, but it's been very impressive and very helpful. And that's another example of the Northeast cluster schools working together.
But what I want to also say, what I want to also say about that, though, one of the analysis on the Chief Joseph Bucket Brigade website, CJBucketBrigade.com, shows that it just totally focuses on how the school closures impact city politics, county services, and state stuff too. But the school district makes these decisions largely in a bubble. And even when local lawmakers, local industry, local businesses try to get involved, as they did last year with the Harriet Tubman closure, they had unprecedented offers of support from Intel, from a number of other creative companies in town. They had Senator Chip Shields, Representative Lou Frederick, City Commissioner Amanda Fritz, all going to the school board meeting and saying, you're going to impact the local economy by shutting this school. And they shut it anyway, right? You know what? It was mostly people of color involved. And so the district just shut it anyway. And then they've been complaining about how bad it was that they shut it this whole time. But if they shut, according to the CJBucketBrigade.com, if the district shuts down Vernon and Woodlawn, there's going to be a swath of 3 miles in North Portland. No, it's North and Northeast. It straddles Lombard, where there's no school. So what does that mean?
Well, to be clear, though, they're not actually... At least the way I understand it, they're not suggesting that they're going to close both Woodlawn and Vernon.
Either of them would have that impact. I believe it's really,
right.
Go ahead.
One or the other, depending on the scenario.
Right.
So.
And so, Lisa, I'm hoping that you might stay on the line for a few minutes and we can take calls from a couple other people, because we love to be able to get your compare and contrast and your analysis, your take on some of the comments, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's go back to the phone lines. We have Susan on the phone. Susan, what's going on with you today?
Oh, hi, thanks for taking my call. And just saying, I have to rush out to get the kids to school and off to work. So just quickly, there were 4 points I wanted to make. One is that there is an event on Friday. I just got a notice of this where there's been a petition circulating asking PPS not to close any more schools, and apparently there's over 1,100 signatures, and so that petition list of signatures is going to be dropped off at the PPS central headquarters at 4 o'clock on Friday, and people are urged to, you know, come join in. So that's number one. Number two, I just wanted to say a thank you to all the people who are organizing on this. I'm actually not in the Jeff cluster. I'm in the Grant cluster, and I've really hated seeing so many schools close and not having the ability to mobilize quickly as a whole community, because I think we end up, you know, parents are busy. We end up thinking about our own schools, and not, we don't care about other schools, but it's just like, the infrastructure hasn't been there. And so I really appreciate this movement that's growing amongst the parents, you know, and the students and the teachers. And I want to see this continue so that we really start thinking about Portland, like all our kids in Portland, and it's like one big district and not just this, you know, separate little clusters and pitting people against each other. So I just a shout out to everyone who's doing that. You mentioned lawsuits, and there have been, and like it's big news. There was a big meeting last night in D.C., and I haven't followed up on it yet today, but like all over the nation, schools are being closed, and the schools that are targeted are those in low-income and minority communities. So there is a huge civil rights lawsuit in Philadelphia, Chicago, all these places, and it's so incredibly relevant. Which gets me to my final point, pressure here, sweetie, which is that I don't see our state doing anything about this, and I'm really upset with PPS because their legislative agenda, I looked at it, and they are pushing all state education reforms. You had an earlier caller talk about Rudy Crew. I don't really see him as a problem. I mean, he's just been brought in to carry out a set of deliverables that have been designed for him. But they're the wrong set of deliverables. And when you look at this legislative agenda that PPS has, they're wanting to push the governor's reforms. Well, the governor's reforms aren't good for schools. People are talking about how parents are leaving our public schools. They want to go places that have smaller class sizes, where their kids get more individualized attention, where there's well-rounded programs. And what we're pushing here in the state is test, 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 test. They want to see higher scores, thinking that that's better for kids somehow. You have to have a quality education. If you focus on providing a quality education, scores will rise. But instead, we're focused on just raising scores, which means you can do that if you don't put money towards it, and now you don't get a quality education. So we're just going to increase the problem rather than fix the problem. So I really think that parents and teachers, those closest to students, need to be truly empowered at that school level, and like policy and budget and decisions like that should come upward from those closest to the students.
Thanks
so
much.
And I wish I could stay on the phone to chat.
Awesome, Susan. Thanks for calling. Susan brought up this really juicy point, and we do have more callers, but I have to put this out. Did anybody listen to Democracy Now! Yesterday up in Seattle, where the parents do not sit around and they don't put up with a bunch of stuff from people? Okay, up in Seattle, the state created this thing. It's called a MAP test. It's a standardized test. It's just like what they're going to do down here in Oregon. Right? They're going to create one of these standardized tests, just another standardized test to put on the pile of standardized tests. Whenever you hear the phrase standardized test, people, I want you to imagine who's making the bazillions of dollars off those tests, right? So, but this MAP test is interesting because, okay, first, Garfield High School, we love Garfield High School in Seattle. Woot! Their teacher stood up and refused to administer the test. Now, a whole bunch of other schools in Seattle have refused to administer that test. And if you go to Democracy Now!, there have been a number of stories about this in Seattle newspapers. I really recommend people look that up. Basically, what they're showing is that this MAP test teaches kids on stuff they haven't learned yet. The questions on the MAP test are completely, they don't have anything to do with anything. Even if we thought that testing the students was a good idea to figure out what they knew, whoever's coming up with the test is coming up literally. It's just like with the foreclosure. You know, the people that are giving false choices, the fraud on behalf by the banks. And you know, when you hear commentators, they're saying, but the people shouldn't have signed those documents. The banks were involved in smoke and mirrors. Same thing has happened with these tests. And it is big bucks. When they're talking about the education reform thing, God bless Rudy Crewe. He's the Oregon education czar. It's true what Susan said. He was brought in to deliver a slate of deliverables, and it's the governor that's coming up with that slate. And what they're doing is they're moving towards more standardized tests. But, I mean, until people at the grassroots level, and I put that out again, especially the schools board members themselves, stand up and start making a stand on this stuff, it's never going to change. And part of this education issue, I think, has to do with the fact, you know, I'm a parent. Who gets really annoyed at this stuff? Parents, and then our kids grow up. And so it's like there's an assembly line of people that exits this movement. It's fascinating. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Angel on the phone. Angel, what's going on?
Oh, not much. How are you doing this morning?
I'm crabby, but you go.
So I'm a whoop-on parent. I have a daughter in a CB classroom, which is a focus classroom, special education, and she's on the autism spectrum. And one of the things that I really wanted to do was piggyback on what Lisa said. There's a real big misconception about the Jefferson Cluster, about our neighborhood schools. You know, we've been dealt a really bad card these last, 12 to 15 years. And if you notice, what the pattern is that we've had more school closures happen in our area than the whole entire district. And so it's one of those things that we kind of feel like we're getting dealt a bad hand. You know, we're not getting help from the district as much as we need, you know, to promote our neighborhood schools and to build, these robust programs that they keep on talking about. Because to them, it's kind of all about numbers. You know, it's all about how many headcounts can we get in here. And like she said as well, and which you'll probably hear from everybody, is amending this transfer policy that allows, and I'm not talking about making it a blanketed, transfer and getting rid of it, but there needs to be some certain amendments so that way our catchment that they keep, wanting us to get, we can get those numbers in our local schools and get these programs that everybody's, needing.
It's interesting about this, Angel, because I'm really old. Like every week I come on the air and say, I'm really old. My kids, we went through this with our neighborhood school, which was Sabin back in the 90s. So we had two kids, the light of our life, me and my beloved sweetheart. We wanted to send our kids to the neighborhood school. We did. We went into Sabin. It was just the most wonderful school. I loved it. The smell of it. Beautiful school. Teachers that cared, right? And yet, in the end, you have an issue with your school. You realize it's like somebody said earlier, parents and families are pitted against the district, against the schools. It's like if it doesn't work for you, you're going to do what you most can for your kid. And we've seen these transfer policies. They result in a massive white flight. This issue about the transfer policy has been on the table for decades. Mm-hmm. Like even since the 70s, I think people that are old timers at Jefferson High School have a few things to say about this, as this whole thing emerged around the Jefferson Dance Program, right?
Yeah.
Transfer policies were supposed to be a solution for low performing schools. I tell you what though, if the district shuts down that transfer policy, it's going to be interesting because there's going to be a riot. There are so many affluent parents that are accustomed to what they call school choice. It's interesting how this thing plays out. Angel, what do you most want to see? How can we support you and your charming kid at Woodlawn?
What we're seeing right now is the collaboration, and that's across our cluster. And I think that's one of the most important facts is that we're having this united stand that we haven't seen in a long time, and it's across all of our cultures, across all of our communities. And I think we really need to focus on that because the Jefferson cluster is the focus now, but the district as a whole, PPS as a whole, I mean, that's our, that should be our common goal, is to reach out, and say, hey, let's get with something long term. Let's make some finalized decisions, but actually come up with a good plan instead of these quick little fixes that they do every 2 or 3 years. You're disrupting the learning, and this is about the kids. It shouldn't be about money and all these other things, because if it's about the money, well, we notice that the money is being used in the wrong places. You know, it's not going to our children. It's going to other things. You know, they're hiring other jobs that don't really need to be done right now. That money could be going and used in our schools. So it's really building this community that I really love seeing this. And I think that we're not going to let that stop. If we keep on having a united voice, I think we can make some differences. And when you mentioned about the lawyers, you know, I've been in contact with some different places, and we're trying to figure out what we can piggyback on with the racial equity policy, and then also about special education, because we have a lot of these kiddos that are being mistreated. And so, you know, you also got to remember that we're low-income families. You know, our socioeconomic status around in this area, you know, we just don't have the money. So what we can do, maybe, you know, if we all chip in $10, who knows? You know, we might be able to find something, but, you know, that's something that we are looking into.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Can I add something?
Yes, please. Is this Lisa?
Lisa.
Right on.
Yeah. So I just wanted to piggyback on what he just said about the United Front and, you know, people coming together. There is another meeting to plan and get more organized. It's Saturday, February 2nd. At 3 to 5 p.m. at the Portland Association of Teachers office. The address is 345 Northeast 8th Avenue. And you can look that up also at facebook.com/cPortland. And the idea is to continue to unite voices and I think, you know, really come up with bolder action.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to let people know about that.
Thanks, Lisa. You know, the other thing, and we do have another caller, but the other thing that strikes me is, so last summer, I went to this rally, this great big rally against closing schools in Pioneer Square, and I interviewed a whole bunch of parents and kids, too. And I interviewed parents from outside the Jefferson Cluster. And one of the things that surprised me was that all the parents that I interviewed outside the Jefferson Cluster totally supported shutting down schools inside the Jefferson Cluster. They all basically echoed the school district line about, well, if these schools, if Humboldt and Tubman are so small that they can't be effective, then they need to be shut down. And I was really, really, really surprised to hear these parents who go to the same magnet schools my kids went to, Da Vinci and what's the other arts magnet school? Da Vinci and Buckman. And they, all these parents, and I'm saying I interviewed 8 separate parents that didn't know each other, different parts of the square. And it occurred to me that that's when I started understanding how the system reinforces itself in the worst possible way for the neighborhood schools. Because the money follows the kids, as people have already pointed out. And so if the people over there in inner southeast Portland don't support what parents are trying to do in the Jefferson Cluster, I think that only collaborating within the cluster, it has its limits. And I'm curious about what efforts people are making to reach out to, you know, Skyline Elementary School up in the Southwest Hills up there. That school has a smaller population than, I think it maybe has the smallest population. Maybe it's in the smallest 5 population in the city. Well, nobody's talking about that school at all. You know, there's all these reasons why you have to have this tiny school up here. But down here in North Northeast Portland, where you're going to create a big gap of schools, well, it's not so important. And the other thing I noticed was that after Tubman was closed down, now the district is basically looking around and saying, what is our middle school situation? It's like these short-term changes always lead to more short-term changes. And to be fair too, I don't know what the district's supposed to do when all they ever get is cut budgets from the state. And we do have a bunch more callers. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Michael on the phone. Michael, what do you think?
I want to be totally real with you, and I want you to...
Oh, no. Michael, come back. Where's Michael?
Hello?
Michael. Good. Okay, Michael, we lost you for a second. Go ahead. We want to hear everything you have to say. Please. Thank you.
Well, okay, first of all, I want to address one negativism. I think the very first thing I think wrong with the Portland school board is they have a female over it that is not a mother. They have a female over the Portland school board. And I'm going to be for real, I think she's a lesbian. That's how I read her. And how can you have someone that job is to deal with children and they ain't a parent? I think that's the first thing that's wrong with the Portland School Board. You ought to have somebody there that is a parent. The other thing that I've noticed about the Portland School Board, because I have a child in Portland Public, and I had to go over there to PPS to deal with them, and I would say 90% of the people that work for the Portland School District are white females, and that's part of the problem. The problem is their orientation. Their orientation is not an orientation that is based on family. That's why you're having all these problems, because of the people that's working their orientation. That's the first thing I see wrong with the Portland School Board. The second is gentrification. Of course, you know, when they started dismantling the black community, you know, their homestead, well, the next thing they're going to dismantle is their school. So you got gentrification going over there. And the white people that have moved over there recently don't really have a strong attachment to the historical aspect of the black community. And so the way they fight is totally different than the way the black community would fight if they were still over there. And so these are some of the basic problems I see. Plus, they use black kids now. When I was going to school, I wasn't that good at math, so they would give me help. Now, if a black kid is weak in one subject, they say they have a learning disability. Now, the schools can use the black kid because now they can get federal money. So that's what one of the games they're running on black kids. And so that's the way I see it.
All right, Michael. All right, thanks for calling in. Michael put a couple of ticking time bombs on the table there. And so Michael's saying that part of the problem with Portland Public Schools is that Superintendent Carol Smith is maybe a lesbian and she doesn't have kids. Okay. I do want to say, actually, lesbians give birth every day in this country. And queer men also have kids every day in this country, too. They don't give birth, but you know what I'm saying. So I have looked at that issue of who is in top of the schools that doesn't have kids. I know loads of people that don't have kids that are fabulous educators, right? Anyway, I'm just going to open that one up. You'd have to describe that as a homophobic comment. Anyway, Michael, and this issue about the racial composition of the employees at Portland Public Schools, it sounds insulting when Michael says it. And yet this is a policy discussion that happens a lot. You know, what is the racial composition of the people that are employed at the school district office? And we know racially, demographically, that actually African-American people, across the country, one of the biggest and best employers of African-American people is government agencies, government bureaus. And so when some of these cuts roll out. You know, they closed down Humboldt Elementary School last year. There were some fabulous black educators in that building. There were some people that have been on the job for decades. People that I know from when my kids were little. And I'm talking about Michelle Lawley, incredible woman. I don't think she had kids either, by the way, Michael. African-American woman doesn't have kids, but she's a great educator. So I'm not sure if I completely am with that. But, yeah, Michael also, he's going there and connecting the real estate with the schools. I really, really think that someone should hammer all of our elected officials on this. I hear people criticizing the mayor of Portland consistently and saying, well, the mayor doesn't have any impact on the school system. Au contraire, mon père. These school board systems, they impact the economy. They impact the real estate. They impact the transportation infrastructure, right? They impact a whole lot of things. And I would really rather, I'd feel more comfortable if the city of Portland intervened or was even at the table, right, when some of these decisions are made, because they have taxpayer ramifications down the road. And we have another caller. Let's go to the caller. Dan, did Michael shock you with some of the things he just said?
Well, I don't, to tell you the truth, I don't want to get into that.
All right, but what's going on with you today, Dan?
Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead. What's going on with you today, Dan?
Kind of, it's almost related, but I probably shouldn't even say that, should I? Because I'm calling about the whole general, I'm not talking about one specific person here, okay? I'm talking about a problem that I don't hear anybody hardly ever bring up. I've been following this school problems for decades, and been concerned about it for decades.
Come
really.
On, Dan, what is it? Get to it.
Okay.
Jeez.
Well, let me give you two pieces of evidence. One, the amount of people that come out of our public schools that can't read well or write well. It's standard in colleges now to have remedial classes. These are people who go to college.
Yep,
they
yep.
have to teach them how to write a decent sentence that just makes sense, where the words are in the right order, you know?
Right, okay, so what's the second thing?
The graduation rate is about 65%. In other words, one out of three people drop out of school. And my contention is that the basic problem is that about three-quarters, now I'm going to leave aside one-quarter of the people that work for the schools, they really don't care about the kids, because that would be impossible. Those two pieces of evidence would be impossible if the teachers cared about their students.
All right, Dan, I get the idea.
I can teach a student to read in 6 months. And if they have to keep them after school one day a week, I talk with an individual student. Anyway, if they cared, none of this would be happening.
I question that, Dan. Thanks for calling, although I'm so thrilled that Dan put on the table this issue of the non-graduation rate, because y'all are remembering that at the end of November, the fabulous education writer for The Oregonian, Betsy Hammond, I really like her. She sits around and thinks about what she's writing about. Her story, Oregon's high school graduation rate, fourth worst in the nation, and no state graduates fewer white students on time. It's amazing, and it is an issue. Now, here we just had Michael trashing queer educators, basically, and now we have Dan kind of, trashing educators in general. They're both saying, you guys are inadequate. Anybody got something to say about that? Let's go back to the phone lines. We got Tyler. Tyler, are you shocked by what you're hearing on the air?
Well, not really. If you have a kid in the Portland Public Schools, you sort of eventually come to that realization. You start out with the high hopes, and then over time you sort of have to sort of lower your expectations. And I think what the cause of the whole problem is that I've been hearing everyone saying about how the school system's like this monolithic block and they don't do things for the kids, and like Dan was saying, the graduation rates are incredibly low. And why is that? And I think that really has to do mostly with the fact of the teachers' unions. And if you could just break up the teachers' unions and give teachers control back of their schools, it would give the teachers incentives to engage their students. Because, I mean, it's crazy that the graduation rates are 67%, because education should be fun. Education should be just mind-blowing. You know, it's like if the education is not mind-blowing and exciting and invigorating, then something's wrong. And that is, I believe, that the system is built more for the teachers than it is for the students.
All right, Tyler, thanks a lot for calling. We got some really controversial objects on the table right now. I'm wondering if anyone would care to call in the few minutes that we have left in the show to respond. So we're talking about the school district's closures, their closure agenda this year for possibly Woodlawn and or Vernon. We had Michael call, and actually Michael put a lot of stuff on the table looking at who are the basically, let's just turn around and say that Michael, Dan, and Tyler are blaming the people inside the system that work in the system. Let's put it that way. I need someone to call and really forcefully squash down the idea that that queer gender educators are not good at their job or something like that. I need someone to call and address the homophobia issue. That's going to be really helpful. And this issue about the teachers' unions, this is the interesting thing about unions, is that actually unions, they deal with money and also control of the workplace. I think, and maybe someone could argue with me, we're only going to have a few minutes left. Actually, I think that the teacher unions give the teachers more control of their workplace. So that's just my take, my quick take. But also, there's no question about the fact that education itself isn't monolithic, and not everyone within that system is the same. Not everyone within that system has the same motivations. And, I've known some fabulous teachers whose lives were crushed against the rocks of the education system, right? There's so many moving parts there. But anyway, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We've got a few minutes left. We're talking about school closures. Portland Public Schools on Friday, Superintendent Carol Smith is set to release her her suggestion on whether or not these schools should be closed. You heard from a parent calling and saying that on Friday at 4 at the school district office, there's going to be the delivery of a gigantic petition to urge her not to close any schools. And now the Portland Public Schools District office, that is at 501 North Dixon. So that's 4 o'clock on Friday. That's right by the Rose Garden. Let's see if we can go to all these last three callers quick like a bunny before we run out of show. We've got Janet. Did we say Janet? Janet,
yes,
on the phone.
Janet Strong again.
Right on, Janet. We had some wild stuff come over the transom since you got off the air.
I can't believe that some of those callers were making these issues about our kids, about gay educators, about women working and not having family issues, and about unions not supporting teachers. Mm-hmm. That all of those calls were so backwards. It was really sad for me to hear that people think like that.
You know what's remarkable to me, Janet, and we are running out of show really quickly, is that sometimes I wonder if people are so hostile towards the school district because of the Reagan administration and all the things they did to demonize public education, but also because every human who had a bad teacher when they were in third grade or something like that, we probably carry that with us forever. But it does make me wonder about people's personal experiences and how they project them. But anyway, we have a couple more callers. One last thing, Janet?
Yeah. The three quarters of teachers don't actually care about students. That was crazy and wild. And I think that the only reason that our schools are even remotely successful is because of teachers who care.
Awesome,
and
Janet.
And them fighting against all of the constraints and all the limitations that they have and still doing the best they can.
Right on,
teachers.
Janet.
Go teachers.
Thanks for calling, Janet. And let's go to another caller really quick. We got Linda on the phone.
The teacher bashing got to me. My brother and sister-in-law are teachers who don't have children. Actually, they're both retired teachers now, and they were both beloved. And, you know, in different fields, my brother raised, you know, huge scores on kids reading and in the grade level that he was at. And my sister-in-law, you know, led these, you know, made a huge difference in tons of kids' lives. And it's just nuts to say they don't all care. And when you look at the national statistics, you see that the majority of teachers put in a lot of their own money and well more than 40 hours a week.
All right, Linda. Thanks for calling up with that hug for teachers. We're starting to run out of show. I see that the Magical Engineering Pixie is like practically shouting into a phone or something like that. Let's see if we can go to another caller. Marianne, in 1 minute, tell us what we need to know.
That call about the teachers got to me, too. And I am responding to your one of your initial requests. My daughter is an alumni, a 94, not in the 70s, but a 94 alumni of Jefferson.
Right on.
And when you go and I went in and I met her teachers because I am an intimately involved parent with my children. And shame on anybody who isn't and thinks that they can, a parent from a distance. Already Jefferson was under the assault of horrible negative campaign and terrible PR. So when I went in and met my daughter's parents at that first PTA meeting, boy, was I flabbergasted to find out they were some of the nicest, most intelligent, warm, loving people you will ever meet.
All right, Marianne, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you for the program.
Excellent. We are running out of show. And so, you know what? I'm just going to say that's it for our show. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky, the studio dog. This show will be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. Go, listeners, I hope everybody calls sooner next week because we hate missing any calls. And there were several on the line here as we're ending the show. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 9 o'clock straight up. Coming up next on Political Perspectives, economist Richard Wolff interviews Professor Jan Raymond, who presents his Gramscian analysis of the Occupy movement. At 9:30 on Political Perspectives, Andrew Geller speaks with Kelly Mitchell, a coal campaigner with Greenpeace, about their new report, Point of No Return, which describes 14 new coal, methane, and oil developments, which, if built, will eliminate our opportunity to prevent catastrophic climate change. At 10 o'clock, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints asks, is Congress really serious about meaningful and humane immigration reform? And we hear a report on another deadly fire in a garment factory in Bangladesh. And at 11 o'clock, host Don Merrill interviews Irma McLaurin, anthropologist, poet, writer, and educator, about how anthropology shapes our world and how the best hopes of science sometimes can't overcome human nature.
KABU is a proud media sponsor of the Fertile Ground Festival of New Works, presented by the Portland Area Theater Alliance from January 24th through February 3rd. Fertile Ground features 88 events with over 50 artists and companies, including Artist Repertory Theater, Portland Playhouse, and Polaris Dance, and dozens more. For a 10-day festival pass or ticket info, visit fertilegroundpdx.org or go to kabu.fm.
KABU Community Radio is proud to sponsor the Portland premiere of Who Bombed Judy Berry at the Clinton Street Theater, Wednesday, February 13th. The film will play at both 7 p.m. and 9:15. This new documentary covers the 1990 bomb attack on two Northern California environmental activists, which still remains unsolved. The film is a compelling tribute to Berry, a fiery speaker whose background as a union organizer put her in a unique position to bridge the cultural divide between forest activists and rank-and-file loggers.
I knew it was a bomb the second that it exploded. I felt it rip through me with just a force more powerful and terrible than anything that I could describe.
Again, that's Wednesday, February 13th at the Clinton Street Theater. More information may be found at kboo.fm/Berry2013.
Up next, we hear an excerpt from the program Economic Update, hosted by Professor Richard Wolff. Here he speaks with Professor Jan Raymond about his Gramscian analysis of the Occupy movement.
I want to welcome Jan Raymond.
Thank you for having me.
Jan is a professor who teaches philosophy and social theory at the Union Theological Seminary, a very old and well-established theological school in New York City. And he also teaches at the Free University in Berlin. He's written many books and articles, and the most recent, which will become available later this year, is called Theories of Ideology.